Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, read by Leah Croft, Friday, March 3, 2023, Volume 94, Number 256. Gusts reach 63 miles per hour as winds rip through Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Wind gusts reached 63 miles per hour in Midland by the late afternoon on Thursday. The National Weather Service, during its 2:53 p.m. report, showed sustained winds of 45 miles per hour and gusts topping out at 63 miles per hour. The winds are from a cold front moving through the area. The winds have done damage, including ripping panels off the Apex building, which is west of the main Claydesta Center building in central Midland. Encore, on its outage map, showed 1,900 customers in West Midland without power as of 4:30 p.m. Estimated restoration is expected to be around 9 p.m. The National Weather Service shows most of West Texas and southeast New Mexico under a high wind warning. Gusts up to 65 miles per hour are possible in Midland. The windy conditions also brought colder temperatures. The National Weather Service reported the temperature in Midland went from 77 degrees at 12:53 p.m. to 54 degrees at 3:53 p.m. The National Weather Service also reported gusts had topped 60 miles per hour twice within a week in Midland. On Sunday, gusts topped out at 65 miles per hour. The NWS website also stated that gusts remained over 40 miles per hour from the 12:53 p.m. report through at least the 4:53 p.m. report. Friday, expect calmer conditions with winds reaching 10 to 15 miles per hour and a high temperature around 67 degrees. Midland Festival Ballet to host dance festival for first time, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Founded in 1993, Midland Festival Ballet provides young dancers a place to express themselves through the art of motion while advancing their careers and skills. As members of the Regional Dance America, RDA, nonprofit organization, every year Midland Festival Ballet travels to participate in a three-day showcase. There, dancers from an array of companies learn from some of the best rookie and veteran choreographers before performing for the local community. Next week, for the first time since their membership began in 2000, Midland Festival Ballet will host the 2023 Southwest Regional RDA Festival. Around 600 people traveling from Louisiana, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arkansas, and other Lone Star cities will take over the Bush Convention Center, learning a total of 32 pieces and creating memories for a lifetime. After each day of classes, performances for the public will take place at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center on March 9, 10, and 11 at 7:30 p.m. all 3 days. To purchase tickets, visit www.wagnernoel.com. Ahead of the festival, Pearl Wamsley, Midland Festival Ballet's communications director and an alumnus, sat down with the Reporter Telegram. Question: what is RDA and the purpose of this festival? Answer: their big thing was to decentralize professional dance, or decentralizing dance in general. Back in the 60s, they thought, well, obviously there's more dance studios around, but how do we help create more opportunities in this country for dance? What if some neighboring states just once a year got together and all performed, took classes, and pooled some resources? It really helps just create a lot more opportunities and upped the quality of dance being offered in America, both for students trying to learn and audiences. Why is this the first time Midland Festival Ballet is hosting? We didn't have the Wagner, the convention center, anywhere that would be able to host that many people at once. It's an honor to host, but a big undertaking, that's for sure. How is this an honor, y'all? Our own company gets to take advantage of a lot of things here. We have our own network of choreographers and teachers that help us grow artistically and technically. We've got a supportive, enthusiastic community that has supported us for almost 30 years. We get to perform with the symphony and local bands. It's an opportunity to share all of that with these other companies we get to see once a year. The directors and dancers alike all remember each other, you know, from the year before or years before. And so they, when they get together, they get to be excited and bond, to get to show everyone this is where we're from and this is how we do things here. It's fun. Energy isn't transitioning, but adding sources. API CEO. By Mella McEwen. In beginning his remarks at the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference keynote dinner, Mike Summers, President and Chief Executive Officer of the American Petroleum Institute, recounted the story of 300,000 British troops trapped by the Germans at Dunkirk, France, during World War II. He related how hundreds of private boat owners answered Prime Minister Churchill's call and helped rescue 320,000 British and French troops. Summers told his audience he related that story because, as private boat owners saved these troops, private U.S. producers are similarly rising to the challenge of meeting the world's energy and security needs. "What happens here makes a difference," he told his audience at the Petroleum Club. He then thanked those in the room for their efforts in providing the world's energy needs, and "we've never needed it more," amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine. He said he travels frequently in his job, from the Permian Basin to an LNG terminal sending Permian Basin natural gas to Europe, to Shell's Tahiti offshore platform in the Gulf of Mexico. It was on that platform that he was pulled aside by a crew member who told him he knows the industry gets maligned, but he loves what he does and how it lets him provide for his family. "I travel because I want to hear those stories. It's the way to communicate with lawmakers," he said. "Most lawmakers don't understand the industry, and one party in particular doesn't always listen to the facts. Those stories," he added, "are far more effective than citing facts." One fact he does try to communicate to lawmakers is, even during the height of the pandemic, when economies across the globe shut down, world oil demand fell only slightly, from 100 million barrels a day to 81 million barrels a day. "If the world is going to continue using oil and gas, where's it going to come from?" he asked. "Will it come from the U.S., the Permian Basin, and other basins, or will it come from regimes hostile to the U.S.? The only question lawmakers should answer is, do we want clean energy produced in the U.S. or from Russia? Since Russia invaded Ukraine a year ago and roiled energy markets, Summers said he has seen a growing consensus among lawmakers that oil and gas is important, yet policies haven't caught up with that consensus. The API has put together an agenda with regards to industry standards for health and the environment to show lawmakers there's a better way. The first of the year, the association issued a 10-point plan called Make, Move, Improve to help continue U.S. energy independence and energy security even amid the energy transition. The most important thing the API deals with is those who think energy Transition means moving away from oil and gas to another energy source in the future. Summers noted that the country transitioned from coal to natural gas several decades ago, and yet in 2022 used more coal than ever in its history and will use even more in 2023. "It's usually an energy addition, not a transition," he said. "Coal will remain part of the energy mix, as will wind and solar. Our children will use 50% more energy than we do today," he said. "It won't come from canceling oil and gas. It will come from adding to oil and gas." To make energy, the API has called on the administration to resume regular lease sales of onshore and offshore federal lands. To move that energy, the association is urging permitting reform to clear the way not just for more pipelines, but for renewable energy projects as well. "In terms of improve," Summers said, "we have to do better. It goes back to our license to operate." The industry's top priority has involved a continuous focus on environmental improvement, he said. "We can export our knowledge. How our 60% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions was because of the switch from coal to natural gas. We can lower our environmental footprint and export U.S. progress." NWS. February was windier than normal. By Stuart Doreen. If it seemed like February 2023 was windier than normal, it was because it was, according to preliminary data from the National Weather Service. The NWS website showed an average wind speed of 11.7 miles per hour at Midland International during the month of February. 2 days where the average wind speed topped 20 miles per hour, 3 days when maximum sustained wind speeds reached at least 40 miles per hour, and 3 days when peak wind speeds, or gusts, topped out at 50 miles per hour or stronger. The strongest sustained wind speed was reported on February 26, 46 miles per hour. The peak wind gust for the month also took place on February 26, 65 miles per hour, just short of the all-time record for February in Midland, 67 miles per hour, on February 9, 1960. How does February 2023 compare to past Februaries? The 11.7 average wind speed tops February 2020 to 2022, when the highest average wind speed for the month was 11.0 miles per hour. While the average daily wind speed topped 20 miles per hour twice in February 2023, the highest average daily wind speed of any February going back to 2020 was 16.8 miles per hour. The highest sustained wind speed, 3 days over 40 miles per hour, also compares well. No day in February from 2020 to 2022 topped 37 miles per hour. Lastly, the peak wind gust in February 2020 to 2022 was 47 miles per hour, well short of the 65 miles per hour on February 26. What to expect? Obviously, Tuesday is another day when winds punished Midland and the region. By early afternoon, wind gusts of 63 miles per hour had been reached at Midland International, although winds as strong as 60 miles per hour were expected, according to the National Weather Service. NWS officials called the wind event of February 2026 and Thursday anomalies and not a reason to necessarily believe that March and April will be any windier than normal. They said when it comes to windy conditions, it is difficult to see beyond a week out. Review. Paranormal Cirque made my palms sweat. Worth a visit. and by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Paranormal Cirque can be found in the Midland Park Mall parking lot. Showtimes run 7:30 p.m. Friday, 6:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Saturday, and 5:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Sunday. Purchase tickets ahead of time at www.paranormalcirque.com or at the ticket booth. Theme: I absolutely pride myself on my love for Halloween. Anything spooky, dark, and spine-chilling takes the cake in my book. Paranormal Cirque fit right into my expectations, even surpassing them a few times. When guests first enter the Clown Castle, after their eyes adjust to the dark and smoky room, they're met head-on by a large metal gate surrounding a graveyard. To the left, bright red and yellow concession lights peer through the fog, and buttered popcorn fills the air. After checking out the graveyard, visitors will quickly find themselves at the beginning of a haunted maze. Filled with creatures galore, each twist and turn features different scares and frights, some which may make you say an explicit or two, so I've heard. Another concession stand can be found at the end of the maze, along with a mad doctor and his intestine-exposed patient. Throughout the performance, entertainers wear blood-spattered and torn clothes, colored contacts, and matching makeup. The set resembled a slightly satanic dungeon, and the occasional use of human-safe fire made for the cherry on top. Performance. There's strong, and then there's flying through the air while holding onto a piece of rope strong. Every member of Paranormal Cirque possesses the impressive latter. Pure talent took over each number, and I was genuinely entertained the entire hour and 45 minutes, 15-minute intermission. Between the unreal feats of strength, mind-boggling illusions, alarming and unsecure flips, tight roping motorcycle, and a plus audience engagement, patrons both young and old clapped, cheered, laughed, and gasped all evening. Although my shoulders stayed glued to my ears and my hands forced me to consider if I had hyperhidrosis, the cast gave an excellent, must-see show. Overall, it's interesting to think about how or why someone could get into circus life. Yet, after watching Paranormal Cirque, it's clear they just love what they do. From the concession and haunted house crews to stage management and acting, each member plays more than one role. Clearly a close-knit touring family, the Paranormal Cirque team not only rewrite the traditional ideas of what an entertaining and exciting circus can be, but also how enthusiasm, hard work, and dedication can take a small-town mall parking lot experience and turn it into a highly recommended experience for all. Tesla gets $330 million tax deal for Nevada expansion, truck plant, by Ken Ritter. Las Vegas. Tesla won more than $330 million in tax breaks from Nevada on Thursday for the company's commitment to a massive expansion of its sprawling vehicle battery facilities east of Reno, including construction of a new electric semi-truck factory. Approval from the Governor's Office of Economic Development came as Governor Joe Lombardo cited the benefit of good-paying jobs and a nearly decade-long boost to the local economy around Tesla's huge gigafactory. "Tesla has far exceeded every promise they made going back to 2014, said Lombardo, a Republican who chairs the board made up of top state-elected education and business officials. The deal is the latest to mark Northern Nevada as a focal point in the U.S. transition to green energy, as Democratic President Joe Biden's administration seeks to move away from gas-powered vehicles in the larger fight against climate change. Lombardo took office in January and has proposed a 2-year state budget of $11 billion. He tweeted a photo of himself January 24 with Tesla CEO Elon Musk at the industrial park east of Reno Sparks and called the pending agreement an incredible investment in our state. Musk also owns Twitter and the rocket company SpaceX. However, the $330 million figure remained secret until Monday due to a non-disclosure agreement between Tesla and state officials. That drew complaints from some lawmakers in the Democratic-controlled state legislature about having only 3 days to review a 20-year tax abatement. There is little to no opportunity to explore how this deal may affect housing, supply, public schools, public safety, and other vital government services in the region, Senator Dina Neal said in a statement. City MPD requests feedback on service by Midland Reporter Telegram. The Midland Police Department has launched an online survey in an effort to gain feedback from Midland residents so the department may continue to provide exceptional and professional service to the community, according to a press release from the City of Midland. This brief survey allows residents to rate areas such as community concerns and department response. If you are interested in participating and filling out the survey, visit https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/Q3RHZ6X, the city reported. The survey will remain open until March 31st. 26-year-old facing charges of assaulting peace officers by Mercedes Cordero, Midland Reporter Telegram. A 26-year-old man was arrested in the early hours of Sunday after assaulting 2 Midland Police Department officers, according to court documents. MPD officers were dispatched at about 1:29 a.m. in reference to a fight at Bourbon Street. Upon arrival, other officers had the scene under control. While waiting for the people involved in the original call to get a sober ride, officers were advised that there was a second fight on the 100 block of West Texas Avenue. The officers observed a man, later identified as Jaime Humberto Garcia, striking a woman who was on the ground. Officers gave commands to stop fighting. Garcia turned to face one of the officers and proceeded to shove him before running away and attempting to jump into the back of a pickup truck. Garcia failed to make it to the pickup, and he struck an officer with a back fist. He also struck the officer above his left ear and left arm, according to the arrest affidavit. While a second officer attempted to take Garcia to the ground, Garcia struck the officer above his right eye. During the altercation, officers used their batons on Garcia, according to the arrest affidavit. Garcia was charged with 2 counts of assault of a peace officer / judge, a second-degree felony, and evading arrest detention, a Class A misdemeanor. He was being held Wednesday at Midland County Jail on a total bond of $51,000. MPD searches for man who failed to register as a sex offender by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is searching for 48-year-old Larry Joe Rawls. Midland authorities are searching for Rawls for failing to register as a sex offender by absconding after an indecent assault. If you have information on the whereabouts of Rawls, contact the Midland Police Department at 432-685-7108. Mother sentenced in murder of daughter, 4. Aria Jones, The Dallas Morning News. A Fort Worth woman pleaded guilty Thursday to the slaying of her 4-year-old daughter in 2020, receiving a 50-year prison sentence. the Tarrant County Criminal District Attorney's Office said. Crystal Judy Lewandowski, 36, has remained at the Tarrant County Jail since she was arrested on a capital murder charge in August 2020. She pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of murder in a deal with prosecutors, according to court records. Her attorney did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Officers responded to Lewandowski's duplex in the 2100 block of Hurley Avenue after she called 911 and reported the girl, Zara, missing on August 24, 2020, according to an arrest warrant affidavit. The dispatcher asked about Zara's location, and Lewandowski said she was in a trash can in the backyard, the affidavit says. A responding officer reported finding the girl's body in a trash bag beneath two other trash bags in the trash can, and she was pronounced dead at the home. Lewandowski eventually told the dispatcher she'd killed the child the previous night, police said. She spoke about hurting her daughter because she was told to do so, and in a later interview she told a detective she had saved her daughter from a more terrible fate, according to the affidavit. Police also said at the time that Child Protective Services removed an 18-month-old boy from the home. New Mexico woman charged in car crash that injured child, by Mercedes Cordero. A 33-year-old New Mexico woman was arrested Friday for her involvement in a wreck that injured a child passenger under the age of 15, who sustained suspected serious bodily injuries, according to court documents. Stephanie Gabrielle Martinez was charged with intoxication, assault, and a vehicle causing serious bodily injury, a third-degree felony charge. She was released on bond. Midland Police Department officers investigated the crash, determining Martinez was traveling westbound in a Chevrolet Blazer on East Gist Avenue and drove toward the right side of the roadway and ultimately failed to control speed, causing her vehicle to hit the left back of a parked Ford F-350 flatbed. The collision caused both vehicles to leave the roadway and into the yard of a residence, according to the arrest affidavit. Officers on the scene observed Martinez exhibited multiple signs of intoxication, according to the arrest affidavit. Martinez and her two passengers were not wearing seat belts. Officers determined that the front seat passenger was not secured in a child safety seat, as required by his age, according to the arrest affidavit. Martinez and the passengers were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. An officer with the MPD Traffic Division, DWI Suppression Unit, responded at about 8:10 p.m. to MMH in reference to a major crash investigation. At the hospital, he met Martinez and also observed she was exhibiting multiple signs of intoxication. During the interview, Martinez told the officer that she was unsure of the details of the crash. When asked if she had consumed any alcoholic drinks, Martinez stated she had 3 12-ounce cans of Bud Light and 3 plastic shot glass-sized bottles of Fireball. She rated her intoxication level at the time of the crash a 7 out of a 0 to 10 scale, according to the arrest affidavit. Martinez agreed to perform standard field sobriety testing and failed, according to the arrest affidavit. Based on the results, officers determined she could not safely operate a motor vehicle without placing herself and other motorists in immediate danger of a vehicle crash/collision. While impounding Martinez's vehicle, MPD officers found 7 open containers of Fireball. The bottles were all opened and the majority of the liquid contents had been consumed, according to the arrest affidavit. The boy passenger sustained a concussion, pulmonary contusion, and a pneumothorax at the base of his lungs. The girl passenger had an ankle sprain. Due to the severity of the boy's injuries, he was transported by air ambulance to Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock, according to the affidavit. Martinez was originally charged with intoxicated while driving while intoxicated, but charges were enhanced to intoxication assault with a vehicle causing serious bodily injury after officers learned of the injuries the boy passengers sustained. Two Dallas teens facing murder charges after fatal shooting in Garland. By Ho-Joon Choi, The Dallas Morning News. Two teens from Dallas are facing murder charges related to the fatal shooting of a 22-year-old man in Garland last month, Garland police announced Thursday. About 12:30 a.m. February 5, officers were dispatched to reports of a car catching fire after crashing into an apartment building in the 4600 block of Saturn Road, police have said. The blaze spread to the building, according to authorities. Responding firefighters found two people, Quincy Lee Branch, 22, of Dallas, and a 19-year-old man from Fort Worth who has not been identified, inside the car with gunshot wounds. Both were taken to the hospital, where Branch was pronounced dead. Police have said that the second victim was expected to survive. Garland police reported in a Thursday news release they believe a 14-year-old, who was already in police custody in connection with a different incident, is responsible for the February 5 shooting. He was charged Wednesday, the release states. Black Vietnam vet at last getting his due, Medal of Honor, by Darlene Superville, Associated Press. Washington. Nearly 60 years after he was first recommended for the nation's highest award for bravery during the Vietnam War, retired Colonel Paris Davis, one of the first black officers to lead a special forces team in combat, will receive the prestigious Medal of Honor on Friday. The overdue recognition for the 83-year-old Virginia resident comes after his recommendation for the medal was lost, resubmitted, and then lost again. It wasn't until 2016, half a century after Davis risked his life to save some of his men by fighting off the North Vietnamese, that a volunteer group of advocates painstakingly recreated and resubmitted the paperwork. Some of Davis's supporters believe racism was to blame, but Davis doesn't dwell on it. He said he doesn't know why it has taken decades for his heroism to be recognized. "Right now, I'm overwhelmed," he told the Associated Press in an interview the day before he attends a White House ceremony where President Joe Biden will hang the blue ribbon holding the Medal of Honor around Davis's neck. "When you're fighting, you're not thinking about this moment," Davis said. "You're just trying to get through that moment." That moment lasted nearly 19 hours and stretched over 2 days in mid-June of 1965. Davis, then a captain and commander with the 5th Special Forces Group, engaged in nearly continuous combat during a pre-dawn raid on a North Vietnamese army camp in the village of Bong Son in Binh Dinh province. He led the charge against the enemy, called for precision artillery fire, engaged in hand-to-hand combat with the North Vietnamese, and thwarted the capture of 3 American soldiers, all while suffering multiple wounds from gunshots and grenade fragments. Davis used his pinky finger to fire his rifle after his hand was shattered by an enemy grenade, according to reports. Davis repeatedly sprinted into an open rice paddy to rescue each member of his team, according to the Army Times. His entire team survived. Davis refused to leave the battlefield until his men were safely removed. Davis, a native of Cleveland, retired in 1985 at the rank of colonel and now lives in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside Washington. Biden called him several weeks ago to deliver the news. He compares receiving the medal to getting a long-anticipated ice cream cone and says the wait in no way lessens the honor. "It's just the antithesis of that," he said. "It heightens the thing. If you've got to wait that long, it's like someone promised you an ice cream cone. You know what it looks like, what it smells like. You just haven't licked it." Davis, commanding officer, recommended him for the military's top honor, but the paperwork disappeared. He eventually was awarded a Silver Star Medal, the military's third highest combat medal, as an interim honor, but members of Davis's team have argued that his skin color was a factor in the disappearance of his Medal of Honor recommendation. Davis's daughter, Regan Davis Hopper, a mom of two teenage sons, told the AP that she only learned of her dad's heroism in 2019. But like him, she said she tries not to dwell on her disappointment in how the situation was handled. "I try not to think about that. I try not to let that weigh me down and make me lose the thrill and excitement of the moment," Hopper said. "I think that's the most important. To just look ahead and think about how exciting it is for America to meet my dad for the first time. I'm just proud of him." Business and oil. Friday, March 3, 2023. Oil price, $78.16, up 47 cents. Gas prices in Midland down 35 cents from last year, by Stuart Doreen. There was a lot of good news from the AAA Texas Weekly gasoline report. Texas is again the home for the cheapest average of regular unleaded gas. And in Midland, the average price dropped 6 cents, according to the organization. That drop means the price in Midland is within 11 cents at 305 of the state average at 294. Other interesting notes from the report include Midland is home to the second highest average in the state, 305, trailing only El Paso at 323. Midland also still trails neighboring city Odessa by 8 cents. The price in Odessa also fell 6 cents this week to 297. Around the region, Midland still lags behind most West Texas communities, many of which are below the state average. San Angelo, which is located around 105 miles from Midland, posted the second lowest average in the state at 285, after a weekly decline of 6 cents. Abilene, around 150 miles from Midland, reported a drop of 7 cents to 286. Lubbock, around 120 miles from Midland, showed an average of 289, a 6 cents weekly decrease. And Amarillo is closer to the state average of 294 after showing a 5 cent decrease. AAA Texas reported the five metropolitan areas of the 27 surveyed with the highest gas prices are El Paso, Midland, Texarkana at $3.04, Laredo at $3, and College Bryan Station at $2.98. The three cities with the lowest prices are Corpus Christi at $2.83, San Angelo, and Abilene. More good news for drivers in Midland include that the average price is down 35 cents compared to the same time in 2022. The state average is down 37 cents, and the price is down nearly $1.50 a gallon from the record set last summer in Midland, $4.52. More interest rate hikes are needed to cool inflation, by Jonelle Marte, Bloomberg. Boston Federal Reserve Bank President Susan Collins said policymakers need to keep raising interest rates to get inflation under control, though exactly how much higher borrowing costs need to go will hinge on incoming data. "I do believe that we will need to do some additional rate increases, and exactly what the right amount is really needs to be dependent on a holistic review of the information that we receive," Collins said during a radio interview with Vermont Public that was recorded Wednesday and shared on Thursday by the media outlet. And then I do believe it will be important to hold there for some time, because it takes a while for the effects of tighter financial conditions to work through the economy. Fed officials lifted interest rates by 25 basis points last month, bringing the target on their benchmark rate to a range of 4.5% to 4.75%. That was a moderation from a 50 basis point increase in December and 4 75 basis point rate hikes rolled out last year. Policymakers in December saw interest rates rising to 5.1 this year, according to median projections released by Fed officials at that meeting. U.S. central bankers are set to release fresh projections when they meet again on March 21-22. Investors are raising their bets for how high the central bank will need to take rates to quell inflation after a string of reports pointed to an economy proving surprisingly resilient to the Fed's aggressive tightening campaign. Markets now see rates peaking at nearly 5.5% this year, according to pricing in future contracts. Collins said last week that the Fed has to keep raising rates to get them to a sufficiently restrictive level, and it may need to hold them there for an extended period of time to get inflation down to the central bank's 2% target. The Boston Fed chief does not vote on monetary policy decisions this year. The Fed officials said during the interview with Vermont Public that while there have been indications of progress, inflation remains elevated. "We've seen some early signs that wage and price pressures might be slowing," she said, "but we've also seen some evidence that high inflation remains, particularly in some areas of services." Company Spotlight, Super Profit. Kroger had its best day in almost 6 months after the grocery store chain topped Wall Street's fourth quarter profit targets and provided a strong forecast for 2023. Cincinnati-based Kroger earned 99 cents per share in the period, beating analyst estimates of 90 cents per share, as well as the 91 cents per share in the same period a year ago. Kroger said it expects full-year 2023 profit between $4.45 and $4.60 per share, well ahead of analyst projections of $4.19 per share profit. Kroger, which owns a bevy of grocery store chains, including Ralph's, Harris Teeter, and King Soopers, agreed last fall to acquire Albertsons for $20 billion. If approved by U.S. antitrust regulators, the deal is expected to close in early 2024. Mortgage rates rise for fourth week in a row, by Prashant Gopal, Bloomberg. Mortgage rates in the U.S. increased this past week, further crimping affordability ahead of what's usually the home buying market's busiest season. The average for a 30-year fixed loan was 6.65%, up from 6.5% last week, Freddie Mac said in a statement Thursday. Borrowing costs have been on a volatile ride since the start of 2023. Rates eased up in January, fueling a bigger-than-expected rise in the sale of new homes that month, but have since shot back up over the past 4 weeks. That's pressuring demand. Home purchase loan applications are at the lowest level in nearly three decades. Now that rates are moving up, affordability is hindered and making it difficult for potential buyers to act, particularly for repeat buyers with existing mortgages at less than half of current rates, said Sam Cotter, Freddie Mac's chief economist. Buyers are facing drastically higher rates than a year ago. For a $600,000 mortgage, a consumer would be paying $3,852 a month, compared to $2,782 nearly a year ago. While mortgage rates declined in January, giving many buyers hope that affordability may improve, they are on the rise again and could even crest 7% again in the next couple of months, said George Ratiu, a senior economist at Realtor.com. U.S. home prices fall from year ago in first since 2012, by Prashant Gopal, Bloomberg. U.S. home prices hit a turning point last month, dropping from a year ago for the first time since 2012, according to Redfin Corp. In the 4 weeks through February 26, the median price for a typical home was $350,246, down 0.6% from the same period a year earlier, the brokerage said Thursday. The surge in borrowing costs last year slammed the brakes on the housing market, sidelining buyers and slowing sales. While price declines could bring some slight relief to consumers, higher mortgage rates are squeezing affordability, and a lack of homes for sale could limit how far prices will fall. Prices falling from a year ago is a milestone because it hasn't happened since the housing market was recovering from the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis, said Taylor Marr, Redfin's deputy chief economist. Prices will probably decline a bit more in the coming months, but first-time buyers hoping to score a major deal this year are likely out of luck. Mortgage rates are nearly double what they were at the same time last year. One measure, by Mortgage News Daily, showed the average for a fixed-rate 30-year loan above 7%. Redfin anticipates that higher rates could lead to a prolonged winter for the market. Limited inventory and continued interest in turnkey homes in desirable neighborhoods will keep prices somewhat propped up, and high rates will continue to be a hit on affordability, Marr said. Walmart Health Expansion to Include Texas, by Maria Halkias, Dallas Morning News. Walmart is pushing ahead with its in-store health clinics and said Thursday it plans to open 28 more, including 18 in Texas's two largest metro areas. Dallas-Fort Worth will get 10 Walmart health clinics in 2024, and 8 are planned for the Houston area also next year. 6 will open in Phoenix and 4 in Kansas City, Missouri. Walmart hasn't yet said which stores will get the new clinics, but soon it plans to begin recruiting for 300 healthcare jobs in DFW and 240 in Houston. Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS have all been moving into the patient care business in recent years by partnering with other companies and making acquisitions. Amazon closed its deal in February to buy primary care provider One Medical, which has opened 3 freestanding clinics in Dallas. Village MD, which is majority owned by Walgreens, has opened dozens of clinics in DFW, many in areas where healthcare facilities are scarce. Store pharmacies have been key links in dispensing all kinds of vaccinations over the years, including since the pandemic started, and now retailers want more of the primary and urgent care business. Everyone is doing their own thing, but for us, we've got a lot of stores in Texas and a lot of associates in Texas and a lot of customers in Texas, and they trust us, said Dr. David Carmouche, Senior Vice President at Walmart Health. We think they'd want affordable basic health care from us. Walmart has 176,000 employees in Texas and operates 592 Walmart neighborhood markets and Sam Clubs. The largest U.S. retailer formed its Walmart Health division in 2019 after trying smaller primary care clinics in about 1,500 square feet of store space. 4 of those are in Texas at Walmarts in Garland, Royce City, Tyler, and Palestine, and they have been rebranded as Walmart Health. Those facilities opened in 2014 as the retailer was exploring the idea of patient care in stores. Walmart health clinics offer both primary and urgent care services and average about 5,750 square feet. On-site labs, X-ray and EKG machines, and treatment for behavioral health, dental, hearing, and other services are part of each location. So far, locations are in Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, and Florida, and Walmart... Oh, it said Florida twice. And Walmart said it expects to have 75 operating in the U.S. by the end of 2024. Walmart health clinics take insurance but also list prices for people who don't. Sick or injury visits are $100. Annual checkup for children is $90. A lipid panel lab test is $29. And a pap smear is $50 to $70. Price transparency is part of the program, Dr. Carmouche said. Dental crowns are priced at $750, and root canals are $600 to $850. Walmart's own employees are a key population using the facilities, he said. Our general philosophy is that we want to keep healthcare affordable. Where we can pass along value to consumers, we will, and we'll price responsibly so that we can continue to grow new centers.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, March 3rd, 2023. Friday Night Lights star in trouble again. James Earl Booby Miles Jr. of Friday Night Lights fame was arrested Wednesday afternoon after his former wife was found passed out in her car with strangulation marks around her neck and an injured face. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the 400-pound Miles, 52, was uncooperative with police and had to be taken into custody with the help of a canine officer. Dispatchers received a 911 call about a disturbance in the 300 block of Dobbs Avenue shortly after 1 p.m. Wednesday. Miles' former wife, 50, told dispatchers her husband was choking her before the line was disconnected. No one answered when the dispatchers called back multiple times. When officers arrived, they found a Chrysler 300 parked halfway out into the street and Miles' former wife unconscious and slumped over toward the passenger seat, the report stated. After the officer knocked on the windows of the locked car repeatedly, the woman came around and unlocked the door. According to the report, Miles' former wife had bloodshot, watery eyes, redness around her neck, bleeding cuts on her right hand, and facial injuries. The officer noted in his report the woman was having a hard time breathing and struggled to speak through her pain. After being taken to Odessa Regional Medical Center, she said she'd been in Odessa for a few days working on her relationship with Miles, but they began to argue because she wanted to stay one more night, the report stated. She told officers he threw her onto the bed and choked her to the point where she was losing her vision, her ability to breathe, and her consciousness. When he released her, she said she began to pray out loud, which prompted him to hit her in the face, the report stated. She remembered being dizzy, starting her car, hitting the curb, and being awakened by an officer, the report stated. According to the report, Miles initially refused to answer the door or come out of the house, but eventually came to the door when extra officers arrived and began using a public address system. Quote, James was very angry, verbally argumentative, and refused officers' commands to exit the residence and come out to us, end quote, the report stated. When Miles did eventually come outside, he refused to approach the officers, stating he wasn't going to be arrested and he wasn't going to go to jail, the report stated. When negotiations failed, they sent in a canine officer who bit Miles, and Miles was taken to Medical Center Hospital, according to the report. While at the hospital, Miles, quote, was very belligerent and making racist-type statements toward officers, end quote, the report stated. After officers smelled marijuana on Miles and Miles' former wife told them he was selling cocaine and marijuana, officers obtained a search warrant for the house. Officers found 7.42 ounces of marijuana in 18 individually wrapped packages Miles said he uses for his knees, the report stated. They also found a gun cleaning kit and bullets for a .38 special. Officers ran a criminal history check on Miles and discovered his former wife had a valid protective order against him. They also learned he has 16 prior arrests and eight convictions for such things as aggravated sexual assault, domestic violence, criminal mischief, interfering with an emergency request for assistance, and marijuana possession, the report stated. In addition, Miles was arrested in January 2022 in Ector County and January 2023 in Taylor County on suspicion of failing to comply sex offender duty to register life/annual, a third-degree felony. He was also arrested in January 2023 in Taylor County for allegedly violating a protective order. The Ector County case remains pending. After being released from MCH, Miles was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of assault, family member by impeding breathing, violation of a protective order by assault/stalking, and possession of marijuana. The assault and protective order charge are third-degree felonies, punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. The marijuana charge is a state jail felony, punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. He remains in custody on surety bonds totaling $68,000 in the Ector County cases. He's also being held on a warrant issued in the Taylor County sex offender case.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.